This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
You are on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and there's Andrew and Lindsay in the studio tonight. It's good to have you back in the studio, Lindsay.
Oh, thank you very much, Andrew. And it has been a while, actually, because it was last year I did my little fill-in with Spirit Lounge, and it was really enjoyable. Actually, a learning curve for me.
You became our resident protagonist because we give everybody a P word on this show.
That was it. I was the protagonist, the sort of non-believer, the one that was throwing, you know, the cat among the pigeons, so to speak.
Well, and I hope you've brought a few cats and pigeons tonight.
I have. They're squawking away under the console.
So tonight we've got coming up, Julie Perrin is going to share a story with us, which I actually really, really love her stories. So we're going to have a listen to one of those. And also Pauline Smith is going to be joining us on the phone to tell us about the World Day of Prayer. So that's coming up on Friday. And joining us in the studio, we'll have Simon Holt from the Collins Street Baptist Church. So that is all coming up on tonight's show. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne and on Star Observer Digital in Sydney, a digital radio pop-up station presented by 2SER, Star Observer. See the banner at joy.org.au for more details.
Our next guest is Simon Holt, joining us in the studio, a chef by trade and a part-time author who's now senior minister at Collins Street Baptist Church. Simon's book, God Next Door, Spirituality and Mission in the Neighbourhood, was awarded the Australian Christian Book of the Year in 2008, and he's now working on another book called Eating Heaven, Spirituality at the Table. Simon, welcome to the Spirit Lounge.
Andrew, it is lovely to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your career as a chef and how that led you into your career in ministry.
It's a strange mix, isn't it? And to be honest with you, my career as a chef was incredibly brief. I left school at the end of year 10 at my father's encouragement because I loved to cook, and he decided that I could do well if I went and found myself in the kitchen. And I took up an apprenticeship with the Victorian government and entered the brave new world of fine cuisine and had an absolute ball. They were 4 wonderful years of training, and then a couple of years after that before I went on to do other things. But I look back at those years with great affection.
Now, I just love the titles of your book, if I can say that, Simon, because you've made me want to read them, because as we were talking earlier, I am the protagonist of the team. But they sound like there's a little bit of humour thrown in there. But what is it about food that you find so spiritual? Is it what you eat? Is it the way that you cook it? Is it like that movie Like Water for Chocolate?
Yeah, Lindsay, it's probably all of those things, I think. Food is such a part of our everyday lives. It sets the rhythm of every day of our lives. And in a sense, because it is so ordinary and so routine and often so mundane, it's the thing that gets lost. We think philosophically about a whole range of issues and challenges in life, but very rarely do we think much about food beyond, you know, what's for dinner or which restaurant is the best place to go. But food plays host to almost every relationship that we have. It's hard to think of an aspect of life that is not in some way formalised, celebrated, enjoyed through sharing of food and drink.
That's just hit a real chord with me, actually, because, you know, when you think about it, you know, when you go out on a date, usually the first date you have, you're out for dinner. If, you know, the Christmas lunch, you know, catching up with family around Easter time and things like that. And you've just really, you know, sparked that memory in me. And it's the Chinese, too. Their philosophy around food is that, you know, you must cook for yourself because, you know, the smell of the food gets the juices going and things like that, which is a spiritual experience.
It is indeed. It, you know, in a sense, if relationships make the world go round, it's food and drink that lubricate the cogs. And in any culture, the world over, food is an expression of identity, an expression of culture, often an expression of religious belief or conviction, or an expression of, you know, the good things in life. We feast together at weddings, we feast together at funerals, we feast together at the beginnings of life and at the ends of life, and all the way in between, we are sharing food and drink as a way of saying we are connected to each other. And in a sense, to talk about the spirituality of food is to talk about the way food embodies meaning in our lives. So whether we are religious or not, food does play a very significant role at deep levels, personally and communally.
Can you think of it like a specific time, like if you've had one meal that you found particularly spiritual? Can you share that with us?
Wow, it's so difficult to think of one, Andrew. I've just celebrated my 50th birthday, and so I've done a heck of a lot of eating. And as you can tell by looking at me, I enjoy the table. You know, most recently I went to Hong Kong, and I went to be with two very distinct communities of people. One were corporate leaders, people who owned companies employing in excess of 10,000 people each. They arrived at the venue in their chauffeur-driven limousines and their fine suits, and we talked together about how their spirituality impacts the way that they lead their companies. And then the other community that I went to work with in the same trip were people on the streets of Mong Kok in Hong Kong, people who were at the very much the other end of life. These were street sweepers, stall holders, as sex workers, these sorts of people, and also asking ourselves the question, how do we seek meaning in the work that we do? At the end of those two events, each of those communities took me out for dinner. And of course, the company executives took me to a very fine restaurant at the top of a beautiful shopping complex with Chanel and all of these other stores around them. An absolutely opulent, beautiful setting. And the food was just kind of blow your mind away. It was amazing. And there was a sense of the beauty of creation and the wonder of life in every plate that was served. It was a marvelous experience. On the same day, my other friends from the other end of town took me to a little restaurant up in the back blocks of Hong Kong, going to the kind of the real poor end of town, kind of stepping over people's laundry as you made your way to the little cafe. And then they took me upstairs to what they called a private dining room. It was somebody's living room that had been transformed for the event. And we set about eating about 12 courses of things that I really had no idea what I was eating, and things that looked a bit strange and tasted strange, but the depth of relationship with these people was absolutely phenomenal. And it reminded me, those two occasions put together, that whether we're dining in five-star luxury or whether we're sitting around a very ordinary Laminex table eating the most ordinary things, these are deeply spiritual occasions.
Yeah, Simon, I mean, while you were talking about that, I was just thinking about, you know, the Sikh religion. Like, their religion is based around food, you know, after a service. And it is. The doors are open and people have preferred food. It's amazing. I mean, there's so many things that are running through my mind, as I'm sure the listeners at the moment, about food and spirituality. Yes. But you're currently working on another book called Eating Heaven, Spirituality at the Table. Is there any link between your book and the upcoming Feast, Pray, Love exhibition, which is about to begin at the Collins Street Baptist Church?
Yeah, look, I have to say there's lots of connections. Because I'm the minister of the church, I get to kind of decide the sort of things that we will celebrate. Mm. And so for me, there's that gnawing question of how do you connect faith, how do you connect spirituality with the very ordinary business of eating? Can you connect them? Mm. I think you can. And I think art provides a way to really explore that in ways that we would not normally think about.
Well, you're sort of hitting on Melbourne's three favourite pastimes, art, food and basically spirituality.
There we go,
aren't
yes.
You?
We're onto a winner, I reckon.
We are.
Fantastic. You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge. We're speaking with Simon Holt.
Listen to Joy when you want, where you want, with the Joy app. Download it for free at joy.org.au.
You're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne and on Southern Star Observer Digital in Sydney, a digital radio pop-up station presented by 2SER, Joy and Star Observer. See the banner at joy.org.au for more details.
Fabulous. I know they're listening. You can feel the Sydneysiders listening, can't you?
I can. Mm. Look, if you are listening in from Sydney, why don't you send us a quick text message, 0427 Joy 949. Tell us what you reckon. Spirituality plus food?
Is it a good mix?
Good mix.
Is it a good mix? Look, I've just totally changed, Simon, believe me. Now, a little more about, I'll be eating, I've just had chips. I'm thinking about those chips. I didn't sort of, it wasn't a spiritual experience, but I'll be looking at those chips differently from now on. Simon, the exhibition, the guys apparently spoke about the exhibition, what everyone had to do to enter. Was it a success? How many entries did you have?
Yeah, look, it's been a great success. The intent behind the exhibition was for us to have artists from the Melbourne community help us to explore the connections in ways that are not just, boring words on pages. Churches and ministers like me are good with words on pages, but we're not so good in thinking metaphorically and visually. And so, the connections between food and spirituality have to do with the heart and the imagination much more than, verbal arguments. So we wanted to explore the connection, and so we put together this exhibition called Feast, Pray, Love, Spirituality and Food to coincide with the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, which kicks in on March the 1st. And we've offered a prize for first, second and third place. We had a terrific response. We had no idea whether we'd get any response at all. I thought I'd have to get my children to get their crayons out and put something together. But we've had a great response, and we've been able to choose out of those responses about 24 pieces to put in our gallery at Collins Street.
And there is an actual gallery at the church?
Well, there is now.
There is Lindsay, now.
Yeah.
Wow.
We have this magnificent old building that was built back in 1843. Mm. And as you enter the building, you come through our beautiful veranda cafe on the Paris end of Collins Street. You come in through those beautiful white pillars. And what we call our narthex, our kind of foyer area, is a lovely glassed-in area. And we have transformed that into quite a beautiful gallery space with professional panelling. And it really does look sensational. And so we've been able to hang these pieces of work, and then we will have an opening this coming Thursday night.
Did anybody end up baking entries? Because I suggested, look, I was thinking about entering, and then I moved house, so I lost all my baking tins.
Oh, Andrew.
I was going to make
spirituality
and food art out of food.
No, look, no one has done that. Oh. No one has done that, but they have come close.
Nobody's taken my idea.
We have both two- and three-dimensional artwork, so we've got a number of people who've done some sculpting work in clay and in iron, and then we've got a whole range of people who've done the more traditional framed artwork in a whole range of mediums, but things that are a little more two-dimensional.
Were there any works that have stood out to you? You've gone, I must have that one hanging up in the
lounge. They've only put them up this morning, and I've had a bit of a race through the exhibition. What has really struck me, and it's a little odd, I suppose, but there's a Melbourne artist called Paul Toms who has put together a series of 90 little white cards, about 6-inch square, and on each of those white cards is a coffee stain, is, you know, the base of a coffee cup when you put table and it leaves a bit of a stain. And there are these 90 of them, so that, you know, there's a whole host of them that we have laid out on the floor around the exhibition. And each of the coffee stains are just this beautiful, unique, you know what coffee stains are like. They're like snowflakes. There are no two alike. And each of those coffee stains represent an encounter, a relationship, a friendship, a conversation, or perhaps a place of solitude and refreshment. And that, for me, just says so simply and so beautifully how deeply a cup of coffee can impact our daily lives.
Well, my morning coffee impacts my daily life every day, I can assure you. It's just like, you know,
it makes life happen.
Give me a heart starter, you know, kickstart the heart. I can't wait to see it, actually, Simon. It sort of really sparked my interest. And all my years of Melbourne, I've never ventured into your church.
Well,
and I've been
passed
many times. But, you know, when you're a protagonist like me, you think, oh, my God, is the place going to burn down?
Well,
should I step foot there in?
Well, that raises a good point, though. Everyone can come along, right?
Absolutely.
You don't have to be... not church exploding.
No, you don't have to be a Baptist. You don't have to be anything at all. You just come along and enjoy the exhibition.
So when does it begin?
It begins this Thursday night. So it's 7 o'clock on Thursday night, the 28th of February. We have a launch of the exhibition and the awarding of the prizes to the winning entrants. And we'll have Jill Manton coming to speak about spirituality and food. And it'll be a great night, champagne and lots of good things to eat. And then the exhibition will be open from March 1 through 10, from 9 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the afternoon every day.
Fantastic. So fabulous. Plenty of opportunity to get down and see.
174 Collins Street.
Fantastic.
Just opposite the region.
And when can we expect the next book, Simon?
The next book is coming out soon. Yeah. Look, I'd like to imagine that in the next few months, I'll have something ready to send to the publisher.
Fantastic. Simon, it's been an absolute delight talking with you this evening.
Thank you. It's been fun.
All the very best with the exhibition. And I'm sure you'll see Andrew and I floating around there.
Thank you, Lindsay.
We'll have to pop in. We'll add our own little coffee mugs to the display. You're listening to Joy 94.9. You're on the Spirit Lounge.
Joy 94.9.
You're in the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof on Joy 94.9. Stories are a good way to connect us to each other and explore our spirituality and sexuality. Julie Perrin is a writer and storyteller, and she's here to share a story with us.
I'm in the deep end, preparing to swim laps in the Shire pool at my favourite holiday destination in Gippsland. I take in the surrounds. A gleeful group of teenagers are waiting to get a briefing from their coach. They lean over the lane ropes, ducking one another and squealing. Their excitement contrasts with their orderly progress up and down the lanes once the training begins. The pool quietens. To my right, in the aqua play lane, two large humans are moving very slowly through the water. The woman seems to be towing the man, who is wrapped in a fluorescent yellow flotation belt. He is leaning sideways, awkwardly curled, supported by flotation devices around his arms as well as his torso. His right hand is clenched and bunches under his chin. His head is twisted to one side. Watching their slow progress, I concoct a story around them. Here is the faithful wife, towing her husband post-calamity. Up and down the pool they go. He has endured some sort of immobilising accident or severe stroke, hence his bent body, folded now into the sideways lean and spasmed hand curl. As I swim up and down beside them, I see their legs underwater. Hers are large but capable, stepping along at the shallow end and paddling quietly as it deepens. The man's legs are stiff. Even while they float, they are rigid. She holds him with one hand at his elbow and another at his back, propelling him gently through the water. I wonder what this slow motion down the pool is like for her. Does it have to suffice for her exercise regime? Does it irritate her? there is little spoken between them until the moment of disembarking the pool. With a concerted shove from the woman, the man's unbending legs are heaved up the steps. He props at the top with his good hand clamped onto the rail. He is tipping on the balls of his feet. They won't flatten out to support him and his legs won't bend. He looks precarious in his saggy speedos, perched at the edge of the pool. I flinch as I imagine him falling, crashing against the concrete ledge that he is propped on. It seems bewildering to me that this woman has to manage helping the man out of the pool unassisted. The uniformed staff at the Shire Pool take barely a passing interest in the occupational health and safety drama unfolding at the top of the steps. The woman is now racing for the wheelchair. Her swimming costume clings to her and rivulets run down her legs as she is running on tiptoes quickly to the motorised chair. Dripping, she gingerly holds the controls to drive the chair forward to collect the man. At the far end of the pool, a lifesaver wearing a red shirt is leaning against the rescue station desk. He sips on a bottle of water and moves across to sit in a small patch of sunlight shining near the end of the coiled cables of lane ropes. The nonchalance of the staff belies the tiptoe drama, and I wonder if the rescue station staff is planning to wait there until the man actually falls back into the pool or the running wet woman slips on the pool deck. I wonder if I'm in a parallel universe where danger exists only in my eyes. As the man is wetly ensconced in his electric wheelchair, I realise I've been pausing at the shallow end, ready to make a dash. I notice my heart is racing. But now the man drives his wheelchair. The woman follows behind as they head towards the change rooms. I go back to doing my laps. At the far end of the pool, I get out to speak to the lifesaver. He has had his spell in the sun and is now manning the rescue station again. What instigates assistance, I ask. Do people have to ask for help before he'll move? He decides I'm trouble. Listen, he says, that's Jim, and he's been coming here for years, and that's his carer, and they don't want any help. I get back into my lane and start swimming between the lane ropes like I'm supposed to. I keep thinking about Jim and his carer, and I wonder if they really do choose their stranded egress. Better not to be fussed over. There is something so powerfully alone about perching on the balls of your feet, unsteadily gripping the rail. It's pretty much where we relegate anyone with a disability. Go to the edge, the special exit or entry, stand there dripping in your undies so all the normal people can check out your difference, so you can be assessed as to how much assistance you deserve, so we can say we offered you help but you didn't want it, so you can be not our problem, so you can be manifestly not like us. Such a simple thing, going to the local pool. You'd think we'd want to make it easy.
Experience more of Julie's stories on tellingwords.com.au.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne and on Star Observer Digital in Sydney, a digital pop-up station presented by 2SR, Joy and Star Observer. See the banner at joy.org.au for more details.
Now, you are on the Spirit Lounge. The World Day of Prayer is a worldwide movement. It's led by Christian women from many traditions who call us together to observe a common day of prayer each year. This year's World Day of Prayer is being held this Friday, and joining us on the phone to tell us a bit more about it is Pauline Schmidt from the World Day of Prayer Victorian Committee. Welcome to the show, Pauline.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you.
Now, can you tell us a little bit more about how did you come up with the concept of the World Day of Prayer? How did it come apart?
Well, it certainly predates me. It goes right back to the 19th century. It was actually an American invention, so not everything that comes to us from America is bad. Christian women at that time, they're Presbyterians actually in the United States and Canada, were anxious to support their women and children who were going off with their husbands to the missions. And both at home, you know, meaning on the North American continent and abroad. And they were really concerned about the welfare of these families because they were going to countries that were foreign and they didn't know the cultures and the customs. And so they wanted to pray for them. And so it really started all from there. But in 1926, the Women of North America distributed the worship service to many countries and partners in mission. And that was the kernel of it all. The response worldwide was most enthusiastic, and it grew into the World Day of Prayer. So it dates back to 1926 as World Day of Prayer, I suppose, but the origins were quite a bit earlier.
Fantastic. And how many countries are participating in the program now?
At the moment, we have about 170 each year. It sits about that mark, you know, a few drop by the wayside, new ones come on board. But on the whole, it's 170. And, of course, therefore, it is that worship services translate into many languages.
And is there a lot of interaction between the countries, like learning about each other? And
well, that's one of the beauties of World Day of Prayer. Each year, the service is written by a different country, by the World Day of Prayer Committee in a different country. And it's all very ecumenical, you understand. You know, women from different faiths, Christian faiths, come together, Christian churches, and they send us some background material about their country. And a theme is chosen for them to write the service to. And so it's like a little geography lesson. Each year as World Day of Prayer comes around, we study a different country of the world.
It sort of sounds like a little bit of fun too, Pauline, in the sort of, you know, pulling it all together and what have you.
Oh, we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. Don't you worry. There's a lot of humour amongst church women worldwide. We tease one another often, especially about our different denominations and the things we do differently. We have a lot of fun. If there's not the old suspicions and stress that there used to be in tension between denominations these days, we're much more easygoing and fun-loving.
Oh, that is good to hear, actually. But each year there's a theme for the World Day of Prayer. What's the theme for this year, Pauline?
The theme for this year is, I was a stranger and you welcomed me. Now, this is, you know, sort of Jesus speaking to his disciples and he's explaining to them how, you know, you must follow his way of life. And they said to him, but when, Lord, did we do that? And he said, whenever you did it to the least of my children, you did it to me. So that's the call to us now, of course, to welcome strangers amongst us in our communities. And it's a big call because we know our whole immigration issue rumbles on year after year. And it certainly does in France too. They have had some very big issues with migration and even with their local Romani people. We used to call them gypsies, but, you know, they were not always made welcome when they came into a town because they were rather nomadic. And there's big issues for us to face up to in this theme.
It's interesting, Pauline, because, you know, you sort of notice through history that when there is major change, and I'm sure you'll agree with me on this, that it is usually the women with a different approach. Like, women aren't going to take up arms. You know, women will handle things a lot differently than what men will.
Well, a very local example of where women were the peacemakers was in Bougainville. Yeah. It was really the women who brought that 10-year war to an end. And I think much the same can be said of that dreadful, you know, hundreds of years long disputes in Ireland. That the women in the end got sick of it and just said, we're not fighting anymore.
No.
Well, you're not fighting anymore.
We're not putting that kettle on anymore, guys. You can make your own tea and, you know, wise up to yourselves.
Yeah, right.
It reminds me
that's
of
right,
that
yeah.
wonderful...
We're withdrawing some of our services.
Say no more.
It reminds me of that wonderful line from My Big Fat Greek Wedding where the mother is talking to the daughter and the daughter's really upset because the dad doesn't want her to get married to someone who's not Greek. And the mother goes, oh, don't you worry about that, because if your father is the head of this family, I'm the neck. I control where the head looks.
Yes, I turn the head.
That is my favourite line from that film.
Very good.
Now, for getting back to the point of our interview, for the World Day of Prayer, how can people actually get involved in this? It's on this Friday, so
am I too late? It is on this Friday, and we simply at this stage invite... or anyone who would like to come along. All are welcome, even people who are not of the Christian faith would be very welcome to join us if they wish. If they want to find out where their local service is, the easiest thing to do is to go onto our website, worldayofprayeraustralia.org, and they'll find a tab there, a link there, to, which is named Find Your Local Service, and then you'll go into your state, and then you'll find your service there. But, Andrew, if I may leave a phone number, people certainly can ring me from anywhere and I will find their local service for them and let them know.
Oh, absolutely. What's the phone number?
My number's 9-03-9842-2995.
Fantastic.
And if I'm not here, well, they can leave me a message. I'll ring them back. And I'll do it urgently because it is only 3 days away.
It is.
It's drawing closer.
So
if people aren't, you know, computer literate and don't know how to go on the website, well, they're welcome to ring me and I'll run their local service to ground for them.
Beautiful. I once read too, Pauline, you know, I try and be a good Buddhist, but I'm a very naughty Buddhist most days. But I read somewhere that if the world got together and we did this almighty great big om around the world, it would be enough to shift the world's axis because, you know, it's such a powerful meditation.
I'm sure you're right. Sure you're right. You said to me off air that one of the favourite little bits on our website was prayer and action are inseparable and both have immeasurable influence in the world. You've just re-echoed that, really, or just echoed that, and it made me think of Lord Alfred Tennyson saying, more things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of.
Absolutely.
And do you know who he had saying that in his literature?
Who?
King Arthur on his deathbed.
Wow. There you go.
I looked it up today because your email to me where you quoted that part from our website made me think of that. And I mean, Lord Alfred Tennyson wrote wonderful stuff. It's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Oh, you know he said that?
Oh, no, you're tearing on our heartstrings now, being both single folk.
Well, a bit stronger, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. That's a Tennyson too.
Beautiful, Pauline. Absolutely beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And I hope that today is an absolutely huge success. If you could just run that number by us one more time if people don't have access to the web.
Yes, the number is 03-9842-2995. All are invited to come
Gorgeous.
On Friday.
Fantastic. Pauline, thank you so much for your time and joining us this evening.
Good night, Andrew.
Bye now.
Bye.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Spirit Lounge on 94.9.
Yes,
Joy FM. Andrew, it's been absolute delight being here this evening. And if I may, just for the next 10 seconds,
tell people
about a very special event that is on this weekend.
Yes,
it is the Tibetan New Year celebrations. And one of my favourite temples in Melbourne, down at Yeroke, is open both days. And you can take a picnic lunch and sit in the beautiful Rose Garden. It really is superb down there. It's off Mickleham Road. Oh, it's on Mickleham Road, sorry. And there is a charge to park the car, but you can also have a lecture there on the day, have a guided meditation and see the fantastic temple as well. There's temple tours as well. So if you have nothing to do this weekend and you'd like to go and experience a little bit of the Buddha down at the Tibetan temple in Yeroke for the Tibetan New Year, there you go.
Oh, fantastic.
I'll be there.
Well, that's all we have time for, guys. We've got 2 seconds,
we're
signing off. That's been the Spirit Lounge for another week. We'll see you again next Tuesday night.
Bye, all.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.